You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, welcome to Live Free, Think Free. I'm Micah. I'm always glad to be here with my co-host and friend, Derek.
What's up, everybody? I'm doing good, man. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done a show, so I'm thankful to everybody who's tuned in. We're live right now on YouTube, several Facebook pages, Rockfin and Odyssey, and our website's thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We broadcast across the Conscious Resistance, all platforms, and still affiliated with 90.1 KPFT in Houston. So we're hoping to have our slot back soon on the FM radio, but we're still working with them and collaborating, supporting that community radio station. And yeah, excited to got you for the next hour or so. And as it looks from our show document, Michael, we got a lot to cover tonight. So
we do have a lot to cover, and I'm pretty excited. It's been a while, and I'm sure we're skipping a lot of stuff. Like we have quite a few old articles that we couldn't get into. But let's get into it. Unless you've got something to say locally going on, I'd rather just get into it.
So, now, we're going to jump ahead. Let's jump ahead. Let me just remind you one more time, guys. The website is thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You go there right now. You can see our last show from December 8th. Like I said, we've been off for a couple of weeks. All our previous shows and the sources to everything we say tonight, all the stories we cover will be found there. So if you want to keep up with everything. Micah, if you're cool with it, I wanted to start by just jumping right into the Twitter files. I mean, we were just having this conversation off air, so I figured we should just continue it.
Yeah, let's just get going. That's a good place to start. I'm sure a lot of people have been hearing about it. You know, it's obviously hitting the news everywhere. And as we know, a lot of people have their own views, and there's big sections of the society that are stuck on what they will hear and what they won't hear, right? So, yeah, let's get into the news a bit.
Let me read you this tweet first real quick. This is the, I think, sort of where I want to go with it once we get into the actual details for those who maybe have no idea what the Twitter files are if you just happen to miss it. Because, like you said, Micah, there is a lot of reporting, but it's mainly coming from, let's say, the alternative independent community. I'm showing on screen right now a tweet from Jeffrey Tucker of the Brownstone Institute, and he says, he's in relation to the Twitter files, it's absolutely stunning. The worst government scandal in a very long time, which is now at Twitter Files Part 8, which just came out tonight, has been revealed, but the mainstream media is studiously ignoring it. What does that tell you? And that's the thing, is there is reporting on it, but it's not anywhere in the mainstream. Most of them, you look on CNN, MSNBC, most of the Washington Post, New York Times, there has been zero mention other than just to say that it's a big nothing burger and there's nothing to it. It's just, oh my God, employees consulting each other before they make big decisions. What's the scandal here? And a real attempt to dismiss this. So I think that's important to acknowledge as well before we get into the details. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off there.
No, that's all good. I was noticing he's a blue check mark.
Yeah, he's had a blue check for a while. Like, surprisingly, even though Jeffrey's Brownstone Institute, I've interviewed him before, and he's been on, I think he's been on Live Free when we were Freethinker Radio at some point. But he's started the Brownstone Institute from working with libertarian think tanks, because he said that he felt like some of these libertarian organizations he was working with were kind of falling down when it came to COVID and what we were seeing. And so he launched the Brownstone Institute to put out papers and reports in a kind of academic fashion on everything that we witnessed the last couple of years. So anyways, let's jump right into it with one of the latest updates. You have this one on FBI. Yeah.
I wish it was more shocking. I wish people were a little bit more shocked by it, right? The FBI turned out has paid nearly $3.5 million of taxpayer cash to ban accounts, to target so-called foreign influence operations. And this has been revealed, as you were mentioning, the Twitter files, the latest edition just released on the 19th here. They say that in an internal email, they say, Twitter representatives, I'm happy to report that we've collected $3,415,323 since October 2019, ! Yeah, that's someone in their scale team, their safety, content, and law enforcement. In 2019, Scale instituted a reimbursement program for our legal process response from the FBI, the email continued. Prior to the start of the program, Twitter chose not to collect under this statutory right. of reimbursement for the time spent processing requests from the FBI. So, I mean, just think about that. They spent $3.5 million worth of time just processing the FBI's requests. I mean, that little tidbit, I mean, that tells you the sheer level. And what do we have here? You know, this to ban accounts. You know, do you think this is all? I mean, we already know. We watched who was, you know, removed from Twitter. I mean, there was a sound of the number of people that left. So I don't know. But you also, the other point on this is like, okay, so that's Twitter. What about Facebook? What about YouTube and Google? And, you know?
I was making this point earlier today on social media, on Facebook and elsewhere, saying that the Twitter files, I don't think they've been exactly groundbreaking. I think there has been backing up things that we've been reporting here on the show and other people in independent media, and pointing to, I think Mint Press News did a really great investigation 6, 7, 8 months ago, looking at Twitter's staff and seeing all these FBI agents, former FBI agents, right? And Google is filled with them as well. Facebook is filled with them. You know, there's some good articles. I can't remember. I'll pull it up in just a bit, but it's called the Social Media Military Industrial Complex is what some people are calling it, because you have this now relationship between Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google, et cetera, coming from literal CIA, FBI intelligence apparatus of the U.S. government, and then going into that sector. And we've also talked in the past about how many of these companies also have had seed funding from the CIA's venture capital firm, InQtel. So there is a relationship between the intelligence community and social media companies. So, yeah, anything else you want to add to that one, Micah? I wanted to talk about another Twitter file that I just
you
came
know,
out.
One thing I would, you know, on your reflection there about that, you know, let's just call it the corporatist revolving door between big tech and, you know, the intelligence community, as you phrased it. You know, this is that same corporatist door that you perhaps see with Raytheon and the Defense Department right now. You know, Raytheon, a massive military contractor. You know, we've seen with the financial branch of the country and the Treasury Department. I mean, so we keep seeing this, and I think it's interesting because maybe a lot of people weren't recognizing this underlying, you know, marriage between these two beforehand. I know a lot of people, you know, they laugh about it because they go, oh, wow, we were just talking about and now it shows up in my feed. You know, they kind of laugh it off. But once you start realizing that it's being shaped and that your money's being taken to shape it, maybe that will, you know, fire off some concern about how it's being shaped. You know, even if you aren't against it in principle, you might start wondering about what's being excluded.
Absolutely. Guys, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free on the Conscious Resistance 90.1 KPFT Houston. We do this once a week. You can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. If you have stories to share with us, music to share with us, feel free to send it to us through the website or through our Facebook page. And we got a comment here from Flatlander Montgomery, wondering if Twitter is public or private. In other words, can they ban whoever they want for any reason? Just wondering, not saying it's right or wrong. They are a private company, I think. But that's the problem, though, is with what we were just discussing a moment ago, is I think that this line gets blurred when you have intelligence agencies, that revolving door, Micah. Like you said, we've seen it with Monsanto and other industries and other corporations, revolving door. You see it at the FCC with the 5G telecom companies, their lawyers, they go back and forth between the government and their industry. And in this way, you see that with social media companies and the intelligence agencies. And after a while, that line starts to be blurred, specifically in the case of, this was somebody I was talking about earlier, Michael. Well, let me pull this.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Regarding Flatlander's comment, yeah, it's a very important comment. It takes us down an avenue of discussion that needs to be had, because there's some other aspects to it. You know, perhaps, you know, this is correct that a private newspaper, a private platform can choose to ban whoever they want and for whatever reason. But should the people's representatives decide in what manner they are banned? Should we pay money for every social media platform to begin banning a speech that we don't want? I mean, I get there's a limit to some things, right? No fire in a theater, right? But is that really where we're at? I mean, so I think there's other questions about whether Twitter is acting in their moral capacity as a private company or versus whether the government is acting in its moral capacity as the representatives of a free people.
Well, and I also think, again, with the point I'm getting here too, is it's not even clear if we could like accurately call them a private company, I think, at this point, when they become so infested with former spooks, government agents. This is just one example I wanted to share that has come out, that this guy was implicated in the Twitter files. Elon Musk did fire him after, I guess, he became aware of his position. This man, as you can see on screen for those watching, is Jim Baker, who is a former employee with the FBI and then former with Twitter. He helped suppress the Hunter Biden story. This has come out with the Twitter files. And the thing I think is interesting is this guy worked at, in the legal department with the FBI and then went to go work in the legal department with Twitter and had a direct relationship with his former colleagues. And in fact, they said that the amount of FBI agents working for Twitter at this point eventually got their own private Slack channel among, you know, the main employee Slack channel. They had their own private ex-FBI agent only Slack channel for them to communicate discreetly with their counterparts back in the FBI, right? So you have this, again, that revolving door, and people like this, who most people have no idea who he is. This guy's walking around doing his, living his life freely. Some would say what he did was criminal, but in his position, first working with the FBI and then working for Twitter, he helped suppress this story, right? And basically coached the Twitter employees, based on what we've seen in the emails that they've shown, which isn't everything. I think that's another problem I have, that we're not seeing it. We're just seeing screenshots. In the emails, though, that we do see, it seems that over months, this guy, Jim Baker, was coaching some of the other Twitter leadership to get them to accept that, hey, there might be some sort of disinformation campaign there, even though they had no evidence. And in fact, that we now know that the FBI was already in possession of Hunter Biden's laptop after it came from the repair shop. And so they knew that it wasn't Russian disinformation, this story about it. And like you said, where we started with the FBI thing, they're using taxpayer dollars to do the whole thing and suppressing information right before an election, working together directly with the intelligence community. I mean, it's pretty crazy. And yeah, so for me, it's hard to know, Mike, like if they're, you know, just fit in that category of a private company. But I do think the conversation and the distinction you were making a moment ago is important. And I don't really see that it is a freedom of speech issue per se, right? Like, I think it's bad when people are being banned on social media and things like that. But if they are private companies, they have that right. But this is where my mind always goes, knowing that it's not just Twitter, it's Facebook, it's Google. So all these platforms, they probably have relationships like this.
Whether they were or weren't, once they take that money, you got to ask yourself, like, how independent are they? You think of them exactly. As private. Most people think of private as like independent, right? Independent of the government, right? Independent, able to make their own decisions and acting independently for some interest of their own, presumably their social media or their, you know, newspaper, magazine, TV channel, whatever it might be. And often we see that that is simply the bottom line. But yeah, how independent is that voice? How independent is your feed? If, you know, millions of dollars are tuning it, you know, so
exactly
that's what we know about, too.
Exactly. We're not even getting the full thing. Now, we got more stories to cover, but we have one more Twitter files update here. This is the latest one that came out just this evening as we're recording on December 20th. This was coming out from Li Fang, a journalist with The Intercept, which, you know, sidebar, I don't really trust this guy and some of his work, but this is who is disseminating this. And basically what it seems like is that Twitter, I don't know if Elon Musk had any role in the decision specifically, but specific journalists have been given access and been the ones reporting, like Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss. There's been a couple others, and then now Li Fang of The Intercept. And so this is a pretty long thread. We're not going to read the entire thing. I think it's like 30 tweets or 21 tweets right here. But there are some very important parts, I think, in this part eight here. I think this, to me, starts to get into some of the deeper things that are a bigger scandal, I would say, if anybody pays attention. So just I'll read from the beginning here. He titles it, "How Twitter Quietly Aided the Pentagon's Covert Online PSYOP Campaign." Despite promises to shut down covert state-run propaganda networks, Twitter docs show that the social media giant directly assisted the U.S. military's influence operations. And it continues, Twitter has claimed for years that they make a concerted effort to detect and thwart government-backed platform manipulation. And then they have a link to some testimony. It says, here's Twitter testifying to Congress about its pledge to rapidly identify and shut down all state-backed covert information operations and deceptive propaganda. And then, but he says, behind the scenes, Twitter gave approval and special protection to the U.S. military's online psychological influence operations. Despite knowledge that the Pentagon propaganda accounts use covert identities, Twitter did not suspend many for around 2 years or more. Some of them still remain active. And this is the interesting part. It says that in 2017, U.S. CENTCOM, Central Command, sent Twitter a list of 52 Arab language accounts that, quote, we use to amplify certain messages. The officials asked for priority service for 6 accounts, verification for 1, and whitelist abilities for others. So just, again, here's the military asking this, quote, unquote, private company to amplify accounts that they're using to spread propaganda. What kind of propaganda? They get to some of this here. The CENTCOM accounts on the list tweeted frequently about U.S. military priorities in the Middle East, including promoting anti-Iran messages, promotion of Saudi Arabia, U.S.-backed war in Yemen, and, quote, accurate U.S. drone strikes that claim to only hit terrorists. And so they've got these accounts tweeting out in Arabic, and it says CENTCOM shifted strategies and deleted disclosures of ties to the Twitter accounts. The bios of the accounts changed to seemingly organic profiles. Another used, it's just describing how these profiles, and goes on from there. There's more, and I do encourage people to see this. I'll link to this. This is Lee Fang on Twitter, @LHFang. You can find it, just tweeted out in the last couple of hours. But it continues. I mean, it goes on for, like I said, 20-something tweets, and shows just the direct connection between the military psychological operations programs and Twitter amplifying certain messages for the U.S. government, but while at the same time telling the American public that certain viewpoints and opinions were Russian disinformation or just misinformation, and shutting those down. So clearly this private company alleged is doing the work of the U.S. military and the intelligence community. The last thing I'll just add here, Micah, he ended with, here's my reported piece, just because some people have asked this. He said, I was given access to Twitter for a few days. I signed and agreed to nothing. Twitter had no input into anything I did or wrote. The searches were carried out by a Twitter attorney, so what I saw could be limited.
Yep.
The thing is, we've known about this too. I feel like this is, if you go back real far, you're talking about counterintelligence programs by the FBI in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, right? That was revealed then. And then we know in the Snowden documents, I remember we reported on, they were covering specifically the UK military, but we know the US military does very similar things, was creating fake online accounts, Twitter accounts, YouTube accounts, and they said influencers even, to amplify certain messages. And I remember one of them that I had read was specifically saying that they were trying to, quote unquote, encourage conformity. And on the documents that Snowden was able to leak, they listed things. They like these D's. There was like, their goal was to discourage, dissuade, disrupt, deny, delay, you know, just like, keep, just troll you, distract you, whatever they can, right? And so I've said before, and I don't think it's out of the, you know, the possibility, realm of possibility, but when you're arguing with that troll on the internet, it could be somebody or a algorithm or a bot at this point trying to just sit there and delay you, distract you, disrupt your daily activities so you can't get anything good done for the world if you're an activist or, say, a journalist or somebody out there. So what the Twitter files in this latest development here on December 20th show us is more confirmation that these things are happening, that the social media account, this shows that the social media companies are directly working with the government to amplify a certain message. The war is good. The U.S. government had an accurate drone strike today, or you know, something like that. And I mean, is it being effective? Who knows, but it's happening, right? And then obviously the opposite end is they're suppressing other stories. They're amplifying some messages and suppressing others. So yeah. Is it a surprise? You surprised at all, Micah?
Not surprised. Realize, you know, that it is definitely a filtered aspect of reality. I mean, it's out there, but it is definitely filtered. And not just through that lens, you know, through a myriad of lenses. And sometimes I'm amazed at how much stupid stuff's on there. I mean, like, really, these videos are ridiculous. Anyway, what's next?
Let's get to the next one. I got this one, man. This is an update. This was actually interesting to see it coming from the Associated Press. It's called Police Seize on COVID-19 Tech to Expand Global Surveillance. And this is part of their, I think, 2022 year in review. So they're kind of It's written by a few different journalists. It's got some length to it. I'd say it's probably 20,000 words. I encourage people to read it. It's got a lot of information, and it's not just focused on one particular area of the world. They talk about Australia. They do talk about India, I believe. India and a few other places, and just give some examples of how, like, the things we've been warned about since the beginning, the tools that the police gathered and used during COVID for, you know, identifying people who are disobeying the lockdowns, or for detecting COVID with facial recognition, or things like that, are now being used to go after activists in different cases. We saw that with China using the contact tracing technology to lock people out from their bank accounts. That happened a couple of months ago. And this article just goes through examples. I mean, it's really a surprising kind of mainstream article. I don't, you know, that it's coming out. And of course, they talk about what's happened to China and zero COVID policy that they have there. They also talk about in Israel, the mass surveillance being used against some people. So I'll just read like a brief piece here, but I encourage people to look into this. And I also encourage you to remember that social media is meant to be social. I encourage you to share this article with your friends, especially if they're not the kind of people who are going to read a quote unquote conspiracy website or an alternative news website. This is the mainstream news, the Associated Press reporting on this, saying things that you might find in the independent alternative media and in a mainstream journalistic way, which some people, we know it, whether for better or worse, won't read it if it doesn't come from a source like this. So take this as an opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, put it out there to people who maybe think you're nuts and say, hey, look, this is even being talked about in the mainstream media now, if that's you know, the qualification that some people need. But right here it says, Ram Louis, a 19-year-old activist, was among hundreds of people whose civil rights attorneys estimate got the text last year at the height of one of the most turbulent recent periods in the Holy Land. Many, including him, say they only lived or worked in the neighborhood and had nothing to do with the civil unrest. What he didn't know was that the feared internal security agency, the Shin Bet, was using mass surveillance technology mobilized for coronavirus contact tracing against Israeli residents and citizens for purposes entirely unrelated to COVID-19. And it basically says here that, you know, when COVID was going on, millions of people listened to government agents and gave away confidential information, gave governments access to their smartphones because it was going to help stop the spread of COVID. In return, quote, governments got a fire hose of individuals' private health data, photographs that captured their facial measurements and their home addresses. Now, from Beijing to Jerusalem to Hyderabad, India, and Perth, Australia, the Associated Press has found that authorities use these technologies and data to halt travel for activists and ordinary people, harass marginalized communities, and link people's health information to other surveillance and law enforcement tools. In some cases, data was shared with spy agencies. Wow, surprise, surprise. And like I said, it mentions China's zero COVID, and it goes on. There's a lot of stuff here. Code red. They even use the phrase the new normal. And I'm surprised that they mentioned some of these places, because I feel like it seems like the mainstream media is okay to say that tyranny and authoritarianism happens in the quote unquote third world or developing world, but rarely will they draw those same conclusions to like Australia or Canada or the US. Like, I don't think the US is mentioned in this article at all and any of the things happening in the US. Maybe they do. I haven't read the whole thing, but it definitely doesn't seem to be. Either way, still a good conversation to start at the least. What do you think, Micah? You think it's worth sharing something like this?
Yeah, definitely. People need to recognize, you know, capacities and the fact that, like, back to it, you know, who these businesses are dealing with and taking money from and building technologies for, and whether you want to support something like that. And I think that's really, you know, one of the reasons I value that we broadcast on so many diverse networks is, you know, we're supporting something other than just the largest social media companies. And yeah, it is great, because we were talking the whole time about, you know, how open and willing people were to just, you know, head towards the vaccine passport. So I don't know. I think people ought to recognize what's possible. So when they start recognizing, if we don't, what are we going to do? Not even know that, you know, there's this potential surveillance state. I don't know. I do think that, there's just so much information, and we were talking about it during that time, that people were offering up, you know, and this kind of plays on that same theme And as it was mentioned in that article, in ways that weren't even related to COVID, they were using these same things. And the other thing is, obviously, just like every war and every time they get to expend trillions of dollars, of course they do breaking new research that then is, you know, harvested and used, and then millions more dollars are printed on something else, and they line up at the trial and they harvest and use it. I mean, they're not just getting money. They're getting the work of that money, the product, what it's created, and then they're employing it. I mean, because are you getting it? I mean, maybe the American people got $600 or something. I don't remember anymore. But yeah, and that's kind of it. It's just every war, every big thing, and then the application of what has been discovered from the research.
Yeah, it continues. It continues. I think it's just, to me, another example that COVID was the latest, never let a good crisis go to waste, right? Whatever your thoughts on COVID,
they clearly. They had that thing on so many levels.
They really did.
They, you know, you got the money printing going on, you know, like you got the money printing going on because they gotta spend. You got the whole societal control thing going on. You've got let's kick out control over the platforms where activists and people communicate. It's like on so many fronts. And how
things have definitely gotten more difficult.
Yeah, it seems like let's just try to be healthy.
Let's go to one more story before we take a music break real quick. I want to just continue this conversation since we dipped into a little bit the surveillance angle in the United States specifically. In case you didn't see this one from the Washington Post reported 2 weeks ago now, TSA now wants to scan your face at security. Here are your rights, they claim. 16 major domestic airports are testing facial recognition tech to verify IDs, and it could go nationwide in 2023.
Like in a week?
Yeah, as in like 11 days from now. next time you're at airport security, get ready to look straight into the camera. The TSA wants to analyze your face. The TSA has been quietly testing facial recognition passenger screening at 16 domestic airports from Washington to LA and the international terminal in Houston as well for a couple of years. I know at some point we've mentioned this because it's been like kind of a warning of guys. I think they're going to eventually roll this out. They're testing it now. Okay. Now they're expanding airports. Now they're talking about it being potentially mandatory coming in the next year. And they hope to expand it across the U.S. as soon as next year. Kiosks with cameras are doing a job that used to be completed by humans, checking the photos on travelers' IDs to make sure they're not imposters. The TSA says facial recognition, which has been banned by cities such as San Francisco, helps improve security and possibly also efficiency. Possibly. We're not sure, but possibly. But it's also bringing an unproven tech with civil rights ramifications we still don't understand to one of the most stressful parts of travel. And it goes on here to just say that, you know, they're talking a different path, trying to get the feel of the people. But it says right here, no, you don't have to participate in facial recognition at the airport. Whether you'll feel like you have a real choice is a separate question. Because that's the whole thing, is they might not even tell you you can opt out. Most people just assume when they're standing in front of you saying, hey, let me scan your face, just like people tend to be compliant when somebody's trying to spray a hand sanitizer in their hands. You can say no. You can ask for a paper menu. You can say no, I don't want my face scanned, at least for now when you want to fly. I think that's going to be gone probably fairly soon, it appears, not just the U.S., but elsewhere. And yeah, they've been experimenting with this since, of course, the 9/11 attacks. And U.S. Customs has been collecting biometric information from passengers and entering the U.S. for a couple of years now. And they've been promising that this kind of thing will make flying faster, smoother, all those kinds of things they like to sell us on. But yeah, that's kind of where it's at. And they have a little map here showing the airports. They show the Dallas airport. Showing a low resolution version of the map, and it's basically showing facial recognition at different airports. And yeah, they have the Dallas airport highlighted.
Yeah. I don't know. Think how many times you just hear about information leaks and everything. Right? Like, where's all this data on your face going to be kept? I mean, like, who's going to have it? Who's going to basically own it? And then what happens with that? I don't know. There's a lot of questions.
There's this one section right here. They have this. Here's your rights section that they say. None of this facial recognition is mandated. Those who do not feel comfortable will still have to present their ID, but they can tell the officer that they don't want their photo taken, and the officer will turn off the live camera. There are also there's supposed to be signs around informing you of your rights. But it says, does this mean you'll get moved to a slow line, get an extra pat down, or a mark on your record? And they. The official said, you should have no derogatory experience based on exercising your rights. If you suspect that has happened, the TSA says you should ask to speak to a manager.
Yep. Nothing. You should ask to speak to a manager, just period, I think, right?
Yeah, just in general. Hey, these people are trying to scan my face. I don't know what's going on here. They have a quote from a lawyer here that says, quote, we often see with these biometric programs is that they are only optional in the introductory phase. And over time, we see them becoming standardized and nationalized and eventually compulsory. There is no place more coercive to ask people for their consent than an airport. I mean, we've been saying that for a while about the pat downs and the body scanners and all that stuff, but
I mean, this is why the TSA had to get in there, right? I mean, think about it. Do you think the airlines are going to say, oh, we're so, you know, we're more worried about seeing who you are versus selling you a ticket? Okay, for real. All them airlines cared about was selling you a ticket and giving you, you know, a ride that you wanted to ride with them again. So much so they give you miles and treats and all kinds of peanuts and I don't know. But, you know, once the TSA gets in there, then all of a sudden you've got a bureaucracy. You've got a federal branch that's not really very accountable, you know, that's ran by the DHS. You know, it's like a little like a franchise of theirs. And we get to see, you know, like we were just talking about, the latest, greatest technology put into action in an arena you might not have seen it in otherwise. Because do you think that Southwest was going to be that worried about who you were to invest all this money in the latest, greatest picture taker of your face? No, but the government would.
Absolutely. Look, I want to show you guys this before we go to a song real quick. Flashback to 10 years ago, April 26, 2012, when myself and Micah and other activists and lawyers in Houston successfully kicked the TSA off the Houston Metro when they tried to come in and start searching people for just riding the bus, just saying they were going to have drug sniffing dogs and they had performed random bag checks and you were going to be questioned for your ID. And we stood up, we didn't get them out of the airports, but we got them out of the buses and they've never come back, at least so far in the last 10 years. And I just wanted to mention that because it's been 10 years and that's awesome. But you see how they're spreading. They tried to spread in Houston. We stopped them there. They're advancing though in the airport. They have more power in the airport. They can set you aside. They can make you miss your flight. They can scan your face now, or at least they're trying to get that that quote unquote right. If you don't push back against these kind of things, guys, they do expand and they won't go away.
I've got to ask you in a sort of way. I mean, maybe this is I even think this is a bit of a stretch, but perhaps it's a kind of a Fourth Amendment right, because like you have the right to be free in your person, right, from unreasonable searches and seizures. So it's not like it's just a quick picture. They said it was 5 seconds. That's 5 seconds you ain't getting back, okay? And what's happening in that 5 seconds? What a super powerful computer, you know, like that would have been the size of a building just a few decades ago. It's doing as many measurements, taking information about the physical features and contours of your being. So, I mean, is that a seizure of information?
Absolutely, man. This is something I've been saying for a while now, and there's been people much more, you know, kind of, I guess, informed and experts in this area warning that facial recognition is a super dangerous technology. And obviously, we already see places like China using it to the detriment of their people there, and places like India with digital IDs and just those infrastructure, they go together. The facial recognition cameras see everywhere you go and track you, as well as the digital wallet or digital ID you use to get into everything. And this is very much the world that we're being pushed into. And the fact that it's rolling out into the airport soon is, I think, a sign that we're already seeing it in the grocery stores as well. Like places like Walmart and Amazon are voluntarily putting in the facial recognition cameras, they say, for safety or all kinds of different things. But yeah, all right, guys, let's go to a song real quick. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to play... let's play Our Friends one more time. I know I've played this a couple times. We're going to play two more songs at least today because we got a lot of stories, but I want to play Our Friends Heavy Thoughts because I've been noticing they're doing pretty good. They're on the radio station 94.5 in Houston. They're getting out there. If you like whatever you want to call this, some people say emo, screamo, pop punk. I don't know what exactly, but it's fun. It's enjoyable. Check it out. This is Houston's Heavy Thoughts and we'll be right back.
Some people are better off alone. Are we ready?
right. Welcome back to Live Free, Think Free on the Conscious Resistance Network and on 90.1 KPFT Houston. That was Heavy Thoughts, Cigarettes, and Broken Hearts, I think. Broken Homes. Yeah, check them out. Heavy Thoughts. They're in Houston doing some cool things.
Definitely sounds good. I'm enjoying it. I know we've played them a few times, and that's what happens, you know. Through the 11 years or whatever we've been doing this, you know, we've had more or less time. Sometimes we've had a two-hour show, and we squeeze in a lot of live acts, stuff like that, and we look forward to doing that again. But we've covered a lot of music. Some shows we would have six, eight songs, you know, and they would rotate through, and then the other times we'll play the same couple of songs for a while. And I just think that bringing music and sharing.
Send us music, more music.
Yeah. Has always been fun. It's been a great aspect. I mean, what's the point of being a DJ if you don't get to discover and play some good music? So help us live like that. Send us the best you know. Because, you know, I believe we have an intelligent audience. And I love all kinds of music, some that moves my heart, some that moves my butt, and some that moves my mind. So, you know, send us the best of something that does all that, and we'll be thankful.
Absolutely. All right, guys, one more time. Our website is thehoustonfreethinkers.com if you want to check out our archives of our show and check out the stories that we cover. We're going to move along. We've got a few more to cover tonight as we are trying to bring you. Our goal here is always uncensored news, underground music, analysis, trying to give you some different thoughts and views and, of course, hearing from you as well. So if you've got comments, whether you're listening on Rockfin, Odyssey, or Facebook or YouTube, please share them and we will share them with everybody else. This is coming from the Brownstone Institute. I shared a tweet earlier from Jeffrey Tucker. He's the founder of Brownstone Institute. This is from one of the writers, Will Jones. And it says here, this is from about a week and a half ago. New autopsy report reveals those who died suddenly were likely killed by the COVID vaccine. And that statement alone is probably enough to get you banned in some places, but let's continue to read here and see if we can get through it without doing that. A major news autopsy report has found that three people who died unexpectedly at home with no pre-existing disease shortly after COVID vaccination were likely killed by the vaccine, the shot. A further two deaths were found to be possibly due to the vaccine. The report, published in Clinical Research in Cardiology, the official journal of the German Cardiac Society, detailed autopsies carried out at Heidelberg University Hospital in 2021. Led by Thomas Longerich and Peter Schirmacher, it found that in five deaths that occurred within a week of the first or second dose of the Pfizer or Moderna shot, inflammation of the heart tissue due to an autoimmune response triggered by the shot had likely or possibly caused the death. And there's some images here from the studies kind of looking at the heart. Basically says the lymphocyte immune cells, white blood cells are shown in blue and brown among the heart tissue, causing localized inflammation that proved fatal. And as we know that many people who are experiencing adverse reactions are having heart palpitations and myocarditis, pericarditis, things like that, heart issues. So it goes on here. It says, in total, the report looked at 35 autopsies carried out at the University of Heidelberg and people who died within 20 days of COVID shots, of which 10 were deemed on examination to be due to a pre-existing illness and not the vaccine. For the remaining 20, the report did not rule out the vaccine as a cause of death, which the Dr. Schirmacher has confirmed is intentional as the autopsy results were inconclusive. Almost all of the remaining cases were of a cardiovascular cause. And it says where 21 of the 30 deaths are attributed to cardiovascular cause, and one is attributed to blood clots from the AstraZeneca shot, leaving 20 from other cardiovascular causes. So people dying after the shot and many of them having heart problems and similar issues, blood clots, things like that happening. And yeah, it goes on from there. I mean, I think it's an important report. This is an article about the report. It links to the actual article in the journal. Again, the journal is Clinical Research in Cardiology for the German Cardiac Society, detailing autopsies carried out at Heidelberg University Hospital in 2021. If you want to find that, you can find it at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And I just want to mention one other thing about this. If this topic and what I just said is new or frightening or sounds too fantastic or unbelievable to you, I would highly encourage you to go to oraclefilms.com. This is a documentary I just watched last week. Oracle Films is based in the UK. I just learned about them recently. But they have this documentary called Safe and Effective, A Second Opinion, which is specifically about the COVID shots. This is not a conspiracy documentary. It's a very well-made 45-minute documentary that focuses on people who've been affected by the COVID shots. They're focused on the UK where the film's based in, and those people sharing their stories and just giving those people a voice, because these people have been ignored or told that they don't exist, that nobody has been harmed by the COVID shots. That's conspiracy, right? The documentary has subtitles in English, Spanish, French, Croatian, German, Italian, Portuguese, and on and on and on. I encourage you to watch this. I'm putting on an event next month here in Mexico, the Greater Reset, and we're going to be doing a Spanish screening of this to the people out here in Morelia, where I live. And I think it's an important film if this is new to you, because it does also talk about the heart issues. There's specifically a couple of people in there who have heart problems now since receiving the shots. Anything you want to say on that, Micah? Thoughts on this? I mean, we've covered some of this, obviously.
I just think it's important, you know, as it goes on and people, you know, as we go forward in time from the event, like any piece of science, that we also study what happens and, you know, draw our own conclusions. There'll be more and more information coming out. And there's also going to be people who might be living with situations from this, you know. I mean, think of all the different things you see on TV that say, did you work in this industry? Were you around this? Blah, blah, blah. And we unfortunately kind of joked about it a bit during the time, because so many people were just rushing out and doing it. But it's kind of, I guess that's kind of like what we're hinting at, that this was untested, that, you know, that the people taking it were the test in a lot of ways, and that they, that this company was not going to be held liable, you know, and that they had a track history. And so I don't know what you say, you know. I got really sad hearing that story. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that jumped in to take that shot to protect people, you know, whether right or wrong, you know, they believed that there was this horrible, you know, plague coming, and there was this chance that they could see grandma, or that they could do whatever it was. And if these, if this evidence holds true and continues to grow, that's just more and more, you know, sad, you know, sad families, people who lost people, because someone, you know, was motivated to do something they saw as good at the time, you know, maybe based on some hasty information. It's really sad when you see young people who are supposed to have, like, you know, a very, very, very high chance of surviving COVID, right? When it, like, you would die in a car crash or something would be more likely. But they were running out to get this shot as if they were about to die in a car crash if they didn't get it. So I think it's kind of, you know, we heard that phrase, mass hysteria. I think it's kind of like we need to be aware of that always, because even if it's a small number of people that are affected negatively, that's still someone's loved one, you know?
And no, absolutely. And I've met people, and I mean, I'm sure you've heard people as well who have had families that have been disrupted by the shots one way or the other. And you're right. Like, I never want to take the position of trying to, you know, make it an us versus them. And I think that's the unfortunate side. There are people who I've seen the last 2 years have said, oh, my family member got the shot, so they're dead to me, you know, kind of thing, where they're like, either they've been so scared, they're like, oh, I don't want to be near them because they're going to get me sick, which shedding is real. And that, I get that. But, you know, I don't think it's just, I don't want to fall into that trap. But it happens on both ways. You know, people who are obviously anti-vaxxer and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, there are people who were propagandized and just told that, like you said, the plague is spreading, and that was enough for them to rush out and go ahead and get it. And many of those people are suffering. And you talk about, like, the way it changes people's lives. Again, in that documentary, this is not like I'm paid or anything. It's just, I watched it recently. I think you guys might enjoy it. There's a guy in there, a young dude. He's in his maybe I think late 20s or something. This guy was a world-class dancer. He like number two in the world for his Latin dance, ballroom dance, different things like that, him and his partner. And so he toured internationally to do his dances. And he said, I had to get the shot because I wanted to do what I love to do, dance, and to travel. I needed to get the shot. So he did it. And then since then, he's one of these people who've had extreme heart problems. And now they've studied his heart, and he has like a heart monitor on. And they basically found that like the damage to his heart muscles has been so extreme that it can't really take much movement. So he tries to get up and move around much, and his heart rate starts going all crazy, you know. And he's like, yeah, this is like, I'm already feeling winded and exhausted. And you know, just the guy is like, kind of one, the other guy is saying basically, if he was to try to continue what he loved to do, the one guy dancing, the other guy, I think he was playing sports or something, that it would could kill him potentially. You know, he might go out and dance and his heart stops or something like that. So it really is messed up, man. It's like the people who lived and who didn't, who haven't. Obviously, some people got the shots and nothing's happened to them yet, and I hope nothing does. But we don't know because it is a live experiment, and we were called crazy. I know I was called crazy for saying that out loud during COVID, that, hey, this is a live experiment because there has been no studies. They're watching, you know, it's just messed up. It's messed up.
Well, one thing that came up in that article that, you know, people need to think about also is that they were saying, I don't remember the exact detail, but relation to these negative effects, for lack of, you know, let's call it that, and autoimmune reactions to the shot. And I mean, we've seen a rise in autoimmune diseases over the last decades as well. So I think that's something to continue to, you know, those people are, you know, I guess need to protect themselves also. And so, you know, this new shot, obviously, it just stands to reason that people with autoimmune diseases or reactions to unknown things being injected in their body might have, you know, up to a fatal reaction to it. So, yeah, I thought that was an interesting little footnote.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We've been covering quite a bit of stories. We're talking about how COVID was used to advance police state and surveillance around the world. And just obviously hear about autopsies showing people dying from heart-related illnesses after the COVID shots. Yeah, there's a lot going on. Talking about the Twitter files and the evidence coming out showing FBI working with Twitter and the government suppressing stories. I mean, it's a wild one out there. Merry Christmas. Hope you're doing well. We got another one for you. Micah's got a Wells Fargo story.
No doubt. But this is kind of interesting, and it'll be fast. It turns out that the Financial Protection Bureau orders Wells Fargo, you know, one of those TARP bailout banks, you know, too big to fail, to pay $3.7 billion for, imagine this, widespread mismanagement of auto loans, mortgages, and deposit accounts. And it turns out that they claim thousands of customers are reported to have lost their vehicles and homes due to the bank's activity over the course of several years. And all this comes back in 2016. I remember us covering this, where the Bureau levied a $100 million fine against Wells Fargo, which was at the time the agency's largest fine ever. So, you know, you get these banks, they get a special right to issue money and loans and you know, be shored up with that. And they can't even manage this right. They get bailed out. And then they are messing over thousands of their customers to where their customers are losing their homes and cars. You know, I don't know much things more important to your average person than their home and car. And then the government, to bail them out, takes money back from them where they create out in there anyway. So it's a really confusing thing. But yeah, I don't know if anyone does bank there. It sounds like it's a really negative thing for you, because you may lose your home and car, and you know, in the end, your government's probably going to bail them out for their failures. Yeah, good stuff.
That's right? How it works, man. The government always comes to bail out the banks, and
maybe that's why they don't take it seriously, you know?
Back in 2010, 2011, I swear we were on the streets and you were chanting, banks got bailed out, we got sold out.
Yeah, I think I kind of remember a similar memory. Maybe they just put that in us, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's really what's happening, and it doesn't stop. And we, you know, inflation bill, this, that, you know, the PPP loans, who gets to make the money on them and who has to issue them. But yeah, that's basically all I wanted. You know, they're still up to the same thing. I want to make sure we know that and realize, you know, sometimes enough people are annoyed by it that they say something, do something, and more people wake up from it. So,
well, we got another one that kind of ties in with this thing that, you know, I feel like with that last story you're covering there and the sort of perennial issues of banks being taken care of and helped out while the people suffer. This one here, I feel like fits in that category, which is this new omnibus bill government, you know, stop the government from shutting down. The latest, like, end of the year, must pass bill, $1.66 trillion.
This is the section of, like, classic Live Free, Think Free. More of the same. You got the banksters and you got your, you know, central authoritarians here. You know, check this bill out for real. It's 4,155 pages, okay? It dropped Monday. They got to read it and vote on it by Friday. Think of that, Derek. 4,155 pages. You going to do that before Friday? It turns out that despite that, 70 out and voted for it and 25% voted against it. And this is just to proceed to debate about it. I guess, you know, they're thinking, oh, well, you know, we can explain it away because if not, there was going to be a shutdown of federal agencies. What agencies? The bureaus that are controlling what the feed is? I mean, at which point does the shutdown of the federal agencies become a good thing to most Americans? But yeah, it turns out that included in this 44, it's actually a $1.66 trillion dollar spending bill. I mean, that's
insane, man.
Yeah. It turns out that there's a $44.9 billion in emergency assistance to Ukraine and NATO allies, and $40.6 billion to assist communities across the U.S. recovering from natural disasters and other matters. Ukraine funds will be used for military training, equipment, logistics, intelligence support, as well as for replenishing U.S. equipment sent to Kiev. Yeah, I mean, goodness. It also includes funding to prepare for and respond to potential nuclear and radiological incidents in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has not ruled out the use of nuclear weapons. They have to squeeze that one in there, you know, so that you buy into the selling of it. Included in the Ukraine package is $13.4 billion in economic aid, along with $2.4 billion to help resettle Ukrainians in the United States. You know, my God, the military aid would be on top of the record $858 billion in U.S. Defense spending over the year. So, you know, what about peace, which is up from last year's $140 billion and also exceeds Biden's request. They want to give him more.
We're dealing with just insane amounts of like, just insane denominations of money that are even hard to really fathom. Just the amount of money, like, and you said, this is just the latest. And obviously before in COVID, we had the COVID Relief Act and this, all those stimulus bills. And it's just, wow, it's insane.
Hey, they do throw some money in there for the poor children. You know, this includes an increase for healthcare funding for the poor children. I guess they need them to grow up and go train the Ukrainians on how to fire our missiles at Russians. I mean, is that not what's happening?
Well, let me show you one other thing here about this this omnibus bill. Like, I want to make it clear because, you know, obviously this is a big bill. You go to CNN.com and, of course, they're going to – wait, hold on. There's nothing about this bill on here. All I see is Trump's taxes, right? Oh, okay, that's more important, right? Now, I want to show you guys this. This is Thomas Massie, Representative Thomas Massie. He's, I'd say, somebody who's better than not from Kentucky, seems to stand on the side of freedom most of the time as far as I've seen. He tweeted earlier today, I'm a no on omnibus. And he says 4,155 pages, $1.7 trillion, $45 billion for Ukraine, plus unrelated laws. Don't tell me you defend democracy if you support one bill once a year that funds everything written behind closed doors by a few insiders with insufficient time to read before voting.
I think that sums it up, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a strong statement. And I want to show you this other one. He retweeted this. I never heard of this guy, Representative Dan Bishop out of North Carolina. He says, my team and I are reading through the omnibus bill today, all 1.7 trillion and 4,000 pages of it. Follow along for some of the most egregious provisions in the bill. And he's got a whole thread going through
it. I mean, he's got a team of people cutting it apart and reading it to find the things that he would stumble on at best, right?
Oh, look at this. Like,
it's the whole thing.
It says, this is interesting, you know, whatever your opinion on the border, there's just an interesting point. It says, it expressly prohibits Border Patrol funding from being used to improve border security, but also gives $410 million towards border security for Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, and Oman. And then it says, it gives $1.4 billion to the UN. The word salmon appears 48 times, $65 million for salmon, $3 million for bee-friendly highways, another for $5 million. You know, it just goes on. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here. Like, and yeah, I don't know how many tweets this is. If they've been tweeting all day, I would imagine they are because there's so much here. Just a bunch of different things from renaming post offices, $524 million for DEI and, quote, structural racism-focused NIH subdivision. Interesting. $300,000 for the continuous, and just going on. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here. And this is also, I will say, Micah, this is coming right after the military budget that just passed, that NDAA for this coming year, National Defense Authorization Act, which always similarly includes all kinds of stuff packed in there because everybody's like, oh, we have to pass the military budget. We can't say no. So people stuff it with all kinds of things that they know they can force through when it comes down to the NDAA. And also, for those who remember, in 2011 going into 2012, Obama signed the NDAA 2012, which codified indefinite detention of American citizens who are considered or labeled domestic extremists or terrorists 10 years ago. Wow, it's been a long time.
Yep.
Wow.
Some things don't change, you know. The players, they some of these things, I guess they just have to have the levers of power. And these, you know, as long as people believe in them, are still levers of power. So I think, like, going into 2023, one of the things that we started asking is, you know, how do you use your freedom? What do you use your freedom, you know? For, I kind of got annoyed with some people I heard at a office building. They were talking about like slavery. I'm like, come on, you don't know what chattel slavery is like. But then I started hearing them and I kind of was like, wait, you're talking about dependency. And so I realized, you know, it's kind of like a continuum, you know, with kind of dependency as a transitory state towards it. And, you know, I think like, well, we do have some freedoms. Maybe we need to start being able to talk about what we can do with those things. Obviously, we can grow food. We can write books. We can, you know, incorporate new technology, solar power, different things into our lives. We can host events. But let's get deeper into this next year, all of us individually. I think, like, we have to be able to show the works of freedom more and more to be able to sell it. Otherwise, yeah, the people who just believe in the on-high solutions are going to continue to have the loudest megaphones.
I agree, right? We got to make sure that our views are represented. And maybe that's a good goal for 2023. Guys, we got a couple more stories with you and we're going to end for this evening. You've been listening to Live Free, Think Free. We're live on Rockfin, live on Odyssey and Facebook and YouTube. This one is a couple of weeks old and I'm sure you've heard about it by now, but just in case, we'll cover it now because we didn't get to it one of our recent weeks. It was supposed to, I think yours, Micah, but this is the news that, again, you might have heard by now, IRS now kind of making it known that they are going to start expecting business payments of more than $600 to be reported to them if you're making payments via PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, etc. If you're sending money more than $600, that's now the new threshold for the 1099K form for third-party payments. What do you think about this, Micah?
I just think from a group of people that's unaccountable to anybody, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they don't respond to anybody on earth. And, you know, here's a group that wants to get into everybody's business. I think about this. A band, you know, that goes to another city could get paid that for four guys, you know, to basically, you know, show up and play a gig. That's within the realm of possibility, you know. That's within the realm of possibility of, you know, just some people earning on eBay. I mean, all these platforms have changed to where you have to give them all this information. And this is coming from a group of people that's not really accountable to anybody. How is it possible? Oh, I guess once they get their foot in the door, you know, it's just more and more of their fat body comes. I don't know. But that's what it seems like. And then we just saw how much money is approved to spend for, you know, war and various and sundrious things. No wonder they need our $600. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, I think it's really dangerous. I'm going to tie this into this short little blog I kind of put together earlier this week or last week. It just came together from some thoughts, and I put it on my website at the Conscious Resistance that ties into this topic of more invasive measures to monitor your money and what you're doing. Now, specifically, I want to make it clear this, as far as I've read it, at least the starting point is that this doesn't apply if you're sending friends and family transactions, say to, you know, your parents or friends on Venmo or PayPal, Cash App. That's what they're saying. It's not supposed to affect that. This is specifically businesses doing transactions more than $600, which still doesn't make it any better. But that's where it's at right now. That's at least the way I've read it, and from what I've looked at here, I would assume that's going to change.
Labor. basically any contract labor. I mean, so like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's how a venue would pay a band. That's how people sometimes pay their lawn service, you know? So
yeah, so see, it says, a frequently asked questions page from the IRS says you shouldn't receive Form 1099 for personal transfers, such as reimbursements for splitting meals, gifts, or allowances. However, if you receive the form, blah, blah, blah. So it's just basically saying it's not supposed to apply to that, but it still is, like you said, contractors, quote unquote, businesses, small businesses. This could affect obviously all kinds of people at the low level of $600. And this, and I want to tie this into the FTX situation, which is much bigger than we have time for today. We've covered this a little bit over the last few weeks and sort of how it seems to lend itself towards the push towards central bank digital currencies. So I wrote this real brief thing you can find at theconsciousresistance.com called On FTX, Central Bank Digital Currencies and the Future of Freedom. Short version of this is that in the recent weeks, because of this FTX collapse and now the arrest of the CEO behind it and the scandal and who's he, you know, the connection to Ukraine and the Democrats and all that stuff, we're seeing introduction of a law called the Digital Asset Anti-Money Laundering Act by Senator Elizabeth Warren, which is a really disastrous bill in a lot of ways. And it's basically trying to make it difficult for people to privately use crypto, to use what are known as swaps, where you can take one cryptocurrency like Bitcoin and then swap it instantly into another crypto of a different value, different coin, different wallet, et cetera. And, they consider that to be money laundering, and they're trying to go after that, start requiring exchanges and all the different infrastructure that's not already doing it to require know your customer, and anti-money laundering, stipulations to their processes. And it could really at least slow down the use of private real crypto peer-to-peer exchange. And I think this is being done obviously on purpose to push towards something like a central bank digital currencies, which government can control and are not private and non-anonymous. Because whether you are a supporter of crypto or not, I know a lot of people have very diverse opinions on that. It's clear to me that they do not like private crypto exchanges. They want people to be using at least exchanges like Binance or mainstream apps like PayPal that they can have access to and they can see. They don't want things like Monero and individuals like peer-to-peer exchanging crypto. They want to be able to see it, track it, know, you know, what's going on. And they have developed technologies to do that. And so now they're pushing for this idea, like we just showed a moment ago, about $600 if you're sending money on PayPal, Cash App, Venmo, but then at the same time going after people via crypto. Now they're wanting these crypto companies to ask for ID, name, phone number, a selfie of your face, things like that. And they're saying, you know, this in my mind could be the end or the beginning of the end of private crypto use. But my thoughts here are this, basically that it comes down to whether you comply or not, just like all of this, right? Everything we've talked about tonight, the advancing of these agendas. The questions I ask here is, will you comply when they attempt to outlaw cash, or if, say, some government did attempt to outlaw cash in favor of CBDCs? If you're not in a position to do anything else, you probably will comply, but maybe you choose not to and find a way around it. Are you going to go along when they announce the digital identities and digital wallets? What about next year if this flying facial recognition becomes mandatory for flying? Is that something that you're willing to continue to go with? You know, will you lock down if they say for the climate? You know, my whole point here is that this, to me, this CBDC, the FTX situation, the introduction of this bill, it's like a bigger picture moment for me of seeing how, again, problem reaction, never let a good crisis go to waste. And are people going to comply? I mean, I think that's just really what it's going to come down to. Are people going to comply? Are they willing to just give, you know, give in to the mandates, the dictates of whatever's coming from this FTX situation, whether it's this new bill or some other push for central bank digital currencies? They're on the way. The U.S. government's studying. The banks are working on them. Bank of International Settlements, the Central Bank of Central Banks is working on them. It's coming.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is. And, you know, it'll have whatever value people choose to have it at it. And that's kind of the whole, will they choose to comply? Will they choose to play in that race? You know, and I think about it, you know, I think even the crypto community, you know, they let in more and more investors and stuff until they got it so watered down with the people playing the game that more people who just wanted to play the money-making side of it got a louder and louder voice. And I don't know how you come back from that at a certain point. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
you know, one, and once we go to the
– Yeah, I was just going to say that's one of the things I say in that little blog is just that in the – go ahead.
I don't know. I just think that once we get stuck on one major one, it turns out to, you know, be like a Google or something where the herd just pushes so hard that way because, you know, everywhere you go to get your gasoline, and so you need Fedcoin. You go, you know, it's not so much that they'll take every other crypto that maybe you and your friends and your small community have figured out a way to trade amongst each other still in. And I think that's kind of the danger. And it is unfortunate that, you know, I guess its success is part of its, you know, demise as a tool that can still deliver in that way once Fedcoin takes over. I mean, if they really have the ability to push that hard.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is they technically can't stop like the networks from running on all the computers around the world, but they can make it so difficult that nobody wants to use it or is afraid to use it, right? So it goes from this massive ecosystem with $1 billion cap and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden shrinks down because everybody's like, oh, I'm not touching it. I'm afraid now. I'm only going to use the approved coin. It will cause some disruption. I got one more story to cover before we're out of here, guys. This is one I've been meaning to get to for a long time, and I think it's important. It's on the more health-related environmental tip, and it's about the United States and Mexico. So it relates to both where you're at, Micah, and where I'm at right now. And if anybody eats corn, you probably care about this one too. The president of Mexico, who's known as AMLO, says, quote, we cannot give in to genetically modified corn from the U.S. Mexico's president is determined to take the issue of genetically modified corn imports to arbitration via the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement that Trump signed, despite, and this is what they say, despite no evidence that GMOs are harmful and ample reason to believe that such a move would negatively affect U.S. farmers and Mexican consumers. I would totally disagree with this claim that there's no negative effects of GMOs. I'll mention that in a moment. But this was interesting. This is 20 days ago that this was being reported. So it's last month, but I think it's still relevant and it will be relevant. Mexico's president at this time struck back, this is late November, struck back at the U.S. threats to resort to legal action if Mexico does not change its attitude towards U.S. imports of genetically modified corn. So basically, AMLO has said that he's not going to be importing any GMO corn from the U.S. starting in 2024. And the U.S. is like, no, you can't do this. This is going to hurt everybody. And it's going to, you know, we're not going to make money. They're attacking him for doing this. AMLO said, we were very clear in what that we can't allow GM corn imports for human consumption. We are self-sufficient in white corn, and we are not going to allow the importation of GM yellow corn for human consumption. His statement came after he met with U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack in Mexico City in late November to discuss the issue. And if you guys remember, I know we've covered this when he was coming into the Biden administration. Tom Vilsack is known as Mr. Monsanto. Yeah, that's the guy running the USDA. He's been working with Monsanto. One of those revolving doors Mike and I were talking about earlier, Tom Vilsack, Mr. Monsanto, is telling the president of Mexico, you can't say no to our GMO corn. I'm sure it has nothing to do with his relationship to Monsanto. AMLO said, quote, we're looking for a solution. He said, quote, we hope to reach an agreement, but if that agreement is not reached, well, there are panels and we shouldn't be alarmed. It'll go to a tribunal, but we cannot give in to that request. And it said Mr. Monsanto came to Mexico as Mexico inches towards a 2024 deadline to end human consumption of GM corn and corn grown with glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup. AMLO ordered the ban in an executive order issued in December 2020. And a statement published after the meeting, Tom Vilsack said that the import ban would, quote, cause both massive economic losses for Mexico's agricultural industries and citizens, as well as place an unjustified burden on U.S. farmers. He also said that, quote, absent acceptable resolution of the U.S. government would be forced to consider all options. One such recourse is to employ the dispute resolution mechanism of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, the USMCA. And, yeah, so we're going to see where this goes. This could be some kind of dispute between the U.S. and Mexico in the coming year or so. But what it says here is that losing Mexico as a buyer of U.S. corn would indeed have huge economic impacts for U.S. farms. Corn exports to the country currently totaled, in 2021, totaled 16.8 million metric tons to Mexico. And Holly Wang, an agricultural economics professor at Purdue University, says that
that number troubles that
16.8
number, though. Like if you're self-sufficient.
Oh, that they're self-sufficient?
Yeah.
Well, that's mainly going for animals, I think, at the moment. But the U.S. wants them to import even more. I know that that's the thing, too, is I really don't understand, honestly. If you're like here in Mexico, there's so many people growing corn. And I guess they're importing a lot. What would it say in 2021, 16.8 million tons. But it doesn't really make sense to me. I guess a lot of it is going to the animals because, I mean, you can go to any market and there's just like all kinds of corn. They talk about the white corn. There's red corn, all kinds of different ones. This lady says Mexico is one of our largest exporting markets. And of course, if it does not accept the GM corn, that will mean our demand is reduced and it may negatively impact the market price.
Because we can't ship to non-GMO corn just to export it. Like, why wouldn't we do that? Like, if you know you got customer clients that'll buy it, why? I guess it's just that much more work.
Yeah, it's interesting. This last paragraph here, it says, although fear of genetically modified organisms is widespread among consumers, science has not found harm. I'm going to show you something that says otherwise in a moment. But this sentence, many healthy corn-fed Americans may regularly eat GM corn without being aware of it. Okay. Then the lawyer says again, there's a misconception that genetically modified corn is not consumed domestically, that such corn for human use is reserved for exports. But that's not true. Overall, there is a concern about biotechnology, especially genetically modified. So the concern is not just in Mexico. It's everywhere in the world. It takes time for people to understand it. Yeah, that idea that people are eating it without knowing, I think it's kind of unsettling because I would say most people, myself included, who want to avoid those things because they have the right to, look for labeling that says, you know, GMO-free or non-GMO project, things like that, to make sure they're not getting that. So hopefully there's, you know, that's accurate. The last thing I'll just say here for anybody who does want to look further into that, I am not a scientist, but this report, this mini documentary I put together called Food as a Weapon as part of the Pyramid of Power that you can find at thepyramidofpower.net. It's like 25 minutes long and talks about a lot of different angles of food, Henry Kissinger, history of farming, factory farming, pesticides, the Rockefellers funding the quote-unquote Green Revolution, particularly going to Mexico and bringing genetically modified foods and bringing pesticides and things like that. And there is some good reporting here, a specific section called GMOs Safe or Dangerous. And I encourage you to check that out if you're totally new to that topic or if you just want to see what I put together there. Because I would disagree with them saying that there's been no science showing it, that it has any harm. And yeah, that's the last story we got, Micah. How's it? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That's a lot of news. Some of it
we got caught up.
Yep, we got caught up. Just want to remind everybody, we're always thankful for being on KPFT, and we're looking to expand our presence there. And thanks to all our supporters who donate at kpft.org in the name of Live Free, Think Free. Thanks to everybody who shares music and gets involved in the conversation. We had a lot of great comments and input tonight, and that's a big part of the show. So yeah, I'm excited. It is, you know, I hate to say, but after a while, when you start seeing these patterns, it does seem like there ought to be ways we can move to set ourselves up to be in a better situation. And I think there's a lot to even talk about in the Mexican article about, you know, trade and what this means and just being stuck on such a large system that one version of corn has to dominate, you know.
Exactly. That's the homogenization of the diet. And that's what a lot of people out here in Mexico, for example, because there's so many indigenous corn varieties, people are trying to protect them from the genetically modified variety, which we know can come in and take over. So, yeah, lots to cover, guys. It's a couple of days from Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and whatever else you do for the holidays. We'll be back next week, probably before New Year's. So maybe we could next week do a sort of best and worst of 2022, what's to come in 2023. I'm sure it's more of the same, unfortunately, and hopefully more good things. Yeah, and thank you everybody over on Rockfin for the comments we had. Lost in Spice say, I wish I had more land to grow my own corn. It takes a lot of space. And an RW said, I eat corn. So hopefully you're eating good corn. And corn, thank you everybody.
Plant, it takes a lot of water.
It does. Thanks everybody over on Rockfin, everybody on Odyssey. We appreciate you. I'm going to end with one of my songs. I played it a couple weeks ago. It's called I Can See Me. Haven't released this anywhere else but here on Live Free, Think Free. And it's part of my new album, Transmutation, which is going to be coming out Friday, January 6th. And We're going to have lots of details on that by next week. I'm about to release my album cover and so many more things. I'm excited to share that with you guys. Check this out. This is I Can See Me, Micah. I'll see you soon in Houston.
Yo, it took for me to turn 33 before I could really see what this world meant to me. It's like a light switched on and all my doubt is gone. I can weather the storm cause I got the world in my palm. Ain't got no fear of flop cause I'm heading to the top to find whoever's there now and knock them off. I ain't got no time to wait for the proper time or place cause I'm here right now to claim my crown. So step into my ring and let me know how you're feeling. If you understand me now, let's reach for the ceiling. Cause we're reaching higher heights than we ever had before. They keep telling us to stop, but we only want more. I'm talking about freedom and love in your heart. They want us to forget as they tear us apart. But how do we stop them from dropping these bombs? They keep coming at us and we keep singing our songs. Songs of love and freedom, prayers to the seventh generation. I know it's our time, the new paradigm begins. Yeah. And shed our fears for a moment. I know it's hard, the dark clouds are an omen. We got brothers and sisters dying of dope. Everyone feels alone these days, can barely cope with the heaviness of a world where most chase paper. They can see the planet's dying, we desecrate her. You wanna go viral to fill the hole inside. There's no need to feel empty, it's only a ride. I know the feeling, the darkness can consume you. It's all about perspective, sometimes you need a new view to see who's been down for you the whole time. I ain't about to give up, I'm here to claim what's mine. So I have to steady myself and keep myself calm. I'm prepared to ready myself in case they want me gone. But I've been to hell, they don't want me neither. I'll try not to die too soon, but I'm an overachiever. Dreaming.